Funerals began today in Red Lake, Minnesota, for victims of Monday's shootings. The Indian community there is trying to recover from the rampage that left 10 people dead, including the shooter, Jeff Weiss. 15-year-old Chase Lusher is being remembered today at a church service. Earlier in the Humanities Building on the Red Lake Indian Reservation, nearly 600 people came to pay their respects to Daryl Lusher and his companion, Michelle Sagana. Daryl Lusher was the gunman's grandfather and a tribal police officer. Minnesota Public Radio's Tom Scheck was there. Tom, were you able to attend the funerals?
No, press was kept about 100 yards away from the event, but you could hear throughout the ceremonies that drums were beating periodically. Also, children were running around the Humanities Center playing tackle or football or whatever. You could tell that this wasn't your typical state services. It was about 2 hours long, maybe 3 hours long. Minnesota's governor also attended. Some would just pay their respects and leave right away.
Even though you weren't inside, were you able to find out what did go on in the services?
Well, we spoke to several people who kind of talked a little bit about the two individuals who were victims in this incident. Some of the folks were talking about Dash Lusher, that was his nickname, Dash. Pat Mills, with the Red Lake Tribal Police Chief, says he and other tribal members are going to miss Lusher a lot.
No matter what time of day it was, he ever worked the evening shift, midnight shift, day shift, he'd always come and say, good morning, and he'd always have a smile on his face, and that would be missed.
Since there are funerals scheduled for the next several days, Red Lake schools will be closed next week, and some students were saying this week that they don't ever want to go back to that school. But Cheryl Thunder, whose cousin was shot in the incident, says that kids should be back in school as soon as possible.
If you fall and break a leg, right, you're going to be scared to walk on it, sure, but you're scared and you'll do it. And I think the kids here need that push, you know, everybody needs to push them back into going back to school.
Tom, we understand there was a poignant moment outside the building.
Yeah, it was actually quite remarkable. There was a bald eagle that started flying about 20 minutes into the services above the building where the services were going on, and it flew up probably about 500 yards and then flew out into the west. Thunder says that bald eagles are spiritually significant in the Red Lake community, and she was saying that that's a very good sign for the victims in this incident.
Minnesota Public Radio's Tom Scheck. Thank you, Tom.
Thank you.
Survivors from another deadly school shooting have been in Red Lake, Minnesota this week. Two former students of Colorado's Columbine High School met with teachers, students, and tribal elders to talk about the struggle ahead as the community tries to cope. They emphasized the importance of adults being ready to listen. That theme was also picked up in a new play about the Columbine school shooting. Columbinus is playing at the Roundhouse Theater in Silver Spring, Maryland. Its creators went around the country interviewing high school students about their lives and feelings. The results are familiar to anyone who's lived through high school, but also wrenching and deeply sad. NPR's arts critic Bob Mondello joins us now to talk about Columbinus.
Good to be here.
The first and second acts of this play are very different. So let's start with the first act, which opens with generic kids all in white underwear. They're about to wake up for school that day.
That's right. And they keep it very generic. I mean, you don't know who these people are. Nobody's given names. And you meet all kinds of different kids. And they're sort of defined by objects that sort of float down from the ceiling. And it's things like a cross on a chain or a pair of sunglasses, just something to define them a little bit. And then you start seeing them in classroom situations, in the hallways, and even in the cafeteria.
See, over there are the guys who wear their ball caps sideways, known as the gangsters. Not to be confused with the minorities. I mean, some of them are, but my point is people sit with other people like them.
No matter when you went to high school, I think you recognize people that you know, or even yourself in that scene.
Oh, yeah. I every time I saw a character in a humiliating situation, I'm telling too much about my private life here, but I would see myself back in high school and how embarrassed I was in certain situations. There's this wonderful scene with a kid who has to shoot a basketball at one point, and I just remember being awkward on a playing field and just being inept, and how awful it felt to have all eyes on you briefly when you were doing something that you couldn't do well. And what was intriguing about this early part of the play is that it suggests to you that it isn't just the dweebs, the people like me, who felt awkward in high school. It's also the jocks, and it's the good girls, and, you know, the homecoming queen, because that's a time of life when you feel awkward. And then in the second act, everything becomes more specific. It becomes specific to Columbine High School. And all of a sudden, two of the kids who have been the most awkward of these awkward kids are suddenly given names. And the names are Eric Harris and Dylan Klebold. And as they're given names, they put pictures of the real Dylan Harris and Eric Klebold up on the screen. And I thought, oh my gosh, these kids look so much like them. I mean, scarily so.
They did.
And then what you watch after that is the specifics of things. You see how the characters might have been affected by things like the fact that they got in trouble with police at one point for robbing a van and then had to go to sessions with a psychotherapist. You watch them as they're becoming disaffected, increasingly angry. And you realize what it's building to.
And you almost see little checkpoints that had something gone different at this place, would this have happened?
Constantly. And what's intriguing here is that they're using real things from Columbine. That composition that Dylan Klebold wrote at one point in which he describes shooting a whole bunch of people in a square. I mean, just this enormously graphic and awful description of the kind of violence that was actually going to happen. And then the teacher chimes in and she says things like, well, you should have capitalized that. And that's
paragraph mark.
Oh, isn't it? And you think, well, they had all of this evidence kind of in front of them and didn't realize how significant it was. And it's really chilling.
They use, like you mentioned, real things. Mm-hmm. It's a documentary. The second half in particular is based on real life, mm-hmm. on a real tragedy in a real place. And a lot of what they used was drawn from the evidence in the Columbine case. For example, the 911 tapes that mm-hmm. were played. Mm-hmm. What kind of value does that have when it's used in art like this?
Well, we're used to seeing it in documentaries and films. It's not quite so common to see it in play work, I guess. But I think the value of it is that it makes things credible that might not be otherwise. And I think that it lends an aura of authority to what you're seeing. And it's different to see things when they're woven together like that. The cold type of newsprint doesn't give you the kind of feeling that it does when there's an actual person in front of you and you're looking at how these things affect people, that this is real. It's not just a news report. It can be a very powerful experience.
And in particular, the scene, the actual shooting scene, the power of that moment.
Yeah, they've devised a really extraordinary sound effect. It's just a matter, I think, of putting a microphone behind an enormous blackboard that's on the stage. And instead of gunshots, which of course would be awful in a theater, and they do something that's very nearly as awful, which is that they just bang on this blackboard, and the effect of it is so powerful.
They both fired over and over.
God, this is so much fun. I've been waiting my whole life for this.
It's really devastating.
You know, this play has gone through several transitions. At one point, they were having conversations with the audience after every show. I think they're still trying to do that when they have matinees for students.
Originally, they had the idea they were going to do that and that was how they were going to answer the questions that the play raises. I think it's actually more interesting dramatically to leave them as questions. And I don't know about your audience, but mine, when we came out of it, I've never heard such a hush. It was as if we'd all been at church. No one was talking as we got out of the theater. And we got further away, and I started, you know, bringing things up. But it was, I needed time to think about it.
I had the same reaction. I mean, personally, I spent about the whole second act in tears. It really affected me. And then I had every intention of interviewing audience members to sort of get a sense of how they felt about it. But I didn't want to talk to anyone, and no one was talking. And there was this feeling of being almost shell-shocked as you tried to process, I guess, the reality of what had happened.
Well, it makes you, the first act takes you back to high school, makes you feel like you're in high school. And then you watch as your classmates do something like this, and you think they're but for the grace of God. You know, it's really scary.
I talked with some of the actors as well, mm-hmm. and they seemed very aware of the context in which they were doing the play, in particular after the recent school shootings in Minnesota. Okay. And they talked about a feeling of responsibility that somehow every high school kid should see this show.
Well, there's something to be said for that. It's actually as much for the parents. It seems to me that what is suggested in the play is that isolation is part of what does this. I mean, the characters may have been psychopaths, And it may have been as simple as that, really. But the suggestion is that there were places where you could reach out to these people and bring them back into the fold, kind of, and that those opportunities were somehow missed. And when you watch the show, you can't help reflecting back on your own life and where you maybe didn't do the thing that you should have done to bring somebody back. And it's a very powerful experience.
NPR's Bob Mondello. The play is called Columbinus. Thank you, Bob.
Thank you.